Hello, and welcome to the Ham Radio Crash Course Podcast, the podcast that follows along with the Ham Radio YouTube channel. But today, we're talking about ham radio in podcast form, where I drag my wife along for the fun. Without further ado, let's get started. And how are you on this fine evening, Leia?
Apparently, I'm along for the fun.
You're along for the fun. It's always fun if we're talking about ham radio. Wouldn't you agree?
It looks so fun.
So fun.
So
what's been going on with your week? We're out of the craziness of last week. How are you on this week?
Okay. So
she just put her hands on the table.
So Ben mm-hmm. is a Cub Scout.
Ben is a
right?
Cub Scout.
It's his second year as a scout.
He is okay. a
tiger.
Tiger.
Yes. Which means it's his first year with the full-blown uniform. When you're a lion, you just wear like a t-shirt.
Right, which when I was in Cub Scouts, the tiger was the t-shirt rank.
Ahaha.
And then you went to Bobcat, and Bobcat was where you get the blue shirt.
Oh.
Yeah, so they actually added a whole new rank, the lower rank.
Yeah. Well,
it's brand new.
Yeah, Ben's class was the first official lion's class.
Yeah, that's crazy, yeah.
So, I mean, soon they're going to do, like, before kindergarten,
the
I guess. Why wouldn't it be the sloth?
The cougar. Because they're cats.
Oh.
They're cats.
Oh, I didn't.
Tiger, lion.
Oh.
Which is funny to me because
what
it's
about
like,
the panther?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I'm not against any big cat being the new rank. I'm just saying that, like, for the younger
Carol child. Carol Baskin's badge.
Kill your husband.
Whacked him. Killed him.
Which cracks me up because it's like the youngest children, they make the most deadliest animal.
The lion, yeah.
Well, but it was tiger before that, and a tiger will mess up all the other ranks.
What's going to trump
a bear? A bear is like the biggest, right? The bear can take out a...
Did you know that a bear is not a big cat?
No, I know. But I mean, like, I don't think most big cats are going to go toe-to-toe with a bear. You know what I mean? But you know what you got to watch out for?
What?
The Weebelow.
What is a Weebelow? I thought it was like...
Somebody will answer us in the email and they'll send it to us.
I thought it was a made-up word, honestly.
It's just like the fleur-de-lis, right? Is the logo of the Weebelow or something like that. I don't remember.
I thought fleur-de-lis was for all of Scouts.
Oh, yeah. It's all over it. But like the Weebelow doesn't really have like a rank insignia except for the fleur-de-lis. At least when I was in Cub Scouts.
Gotcha.
But who knows? Anyway, he is now a taiga.
Yes. And that meant I had to sew all of these badges on the shirt. And it's not...
You went from t-shirt to full-on button-down collared scout uniform. Yeah.
And I mean, I've put like badges on things before. Mm-hmm. You know, and I like can mend things.
Yeah.
But the effort it takes... to sew these on in the right position.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so that the stitching doesn't look terrible
mm-hmm.
and will stay on for wash after wash because this is his only shirt.
Yeah, and he's going to be using it for like years.
5 years or something.
Right, because there's nothing worse than sewing the whole thing on and he grows out of it.
Oh, my gosh. That's what Helen's having to do for Ellie.
Yeah,
because Ellie's grown
like
so quickly.
Yeah.
She thought she bought a shirt that would like last Ellie.
Yeah.
And she was like, I have to seam rip
Mistakes
them all
made.
Off.
Mistakes were made.
And she was like, it's a good thing I didn't sew them all on.
Yeah. So the thing that that happened when I was in Cub Scouts, and I didn't see any kids with it when I was at one of the meetings before COVID hit. In my troop, they had arrowheads. Did you see arrowheads by chance? Gold and silver arrowheads?
Where?
You didn't see, you'd know if you saw them. They were like merit. They weren't merit badges. They were like good turns. And you like accrued them. So like the whole left side of my...
Oh, those exist. Those still exist. I think they just don't have them yet.
Okay. I didn't
right
see any
now,
kids with them. They usually get them when they get a little bit older. But it was like a lot. Like you had to sew like all this stuff on.
Right.
Not just the ranks, but all these like arrowheads.
And then you told me that you sewed your own patches on. And I thought to myself.
When I was a Boy Scout.
Okay. But when I was sewing Ben's stuff on, you're like, did your mom used to do this? And then you're like, no, I sewed on my own badges. And I'm thinking to myself, there's no way. There's no way Ben could do it. And Ben's a bright kid. He's a really, he's a do-it kid.
Yeah,
there's
yeah, yeah.
no way he's sewing. And I'm like hurting myself, right? Like I've got, like a, I'm trying to use a thimble properly. It's just not working out.
We learned about thimbles though, or you did.
No, I knew what a thimble was.
No,
I think like, it goes not, on the thumb.
You can use two. But if you don't want to stab yourself, then it should go on the finger that's receiving the needle.
Yeah, but then it affects your dexterity.
Okay.
Anyway, so...
You gotta be really dexterous when you catch that needle on your bare flesh.
So I don't finish.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. He's got like the fleur-de-lis. There's no border around the fleur-de-lis
right.
because I haven't done that portion. Mm-hmm. I haven't put the lion on because the lion's supposed to go below all of the other animals. And it's like, I don't know where those animals go because he doesn't have them yet.
Yep.
And then I thought to myself, why is everybody asking for patches on Ham Tactical? Are you guys all sewing these
they're
patches?
They're Velcro-backed.
Ah.
Yeah, they're all Velcro-backed. So you just have a like a felt sheet somewhere.
I see.
And you slap the patches on the side of it. I will tell you the little thing that eventually my mom got into, because I think she kind of got to the point where she was fed up a bit.
Yeah.
Hot glue. Just hot glued them on.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, yeah. I don't believe. No.
Multiple kids had like hot glued on patches too, because you'd see like the glue dried on the side of the patch.
I can't do it. I mean, as of today, I can't do it. Talk to me in like
a couple years. Yeah, exactly.
Like hot glue's the hot ticket.
That's right.
But I that's a good tip actually, because I was thinking to myself, there is no way that this many parents are sitting around sewing all of these. There must be a shortcut. There's got to be like some secret to mm-hmm. these badges that makes it so that like it's not this time consuming. It didn't even look like they were iron on.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like a real mistake.
And the solution is you pay somebody else to do it, right?
Yeah, because the scout shop will do it for
right.
you.
Which
for
is
for a fee.
I mean, it makes sense, right? Why would they not try to make some money off
yeah.
of that? But. Well, anyway, welcome to the Ham Radio Crash Course, everybody. Thanks.
So, I mean, just be warned, if I put patches on the site, you're going to have to sew them, guys.
Yeah, she wants to see them sewn. None of this Velcro stuff. You got to sew them onto some kind of shirt, and then you got to post a picture somewhere for us to see it. Well, again, welcome. Thank you so much for coming out. We like to, before the cold open, we like to do a little thing we call the Ham Radio Minute.
It's never a minute, though.
That's right. And today we're going to be talking about throw lines and throw bags. So this is November, the month of antennas. No particular reason November is the month of antennas. I thought it was
like an official month, like No Shave November.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, this is in ham radio. Mm-hmm. Instead of shaving, we make antennas.
Right. I mean, a lot of people make antennas during the winter anyway, right? Because they're stuck in their home, so they build a little antenna projects and stuff like that. And then they, you know, when it gets a little bit better weather, they go outside and hoist them up, do all that fun stuff.
People live in very large homes that they can just make large
antennas.
It's not hard
to measure a wire in a tight space. You just kind of go back and forth, you know, because you need to cut it long anyway when it's on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You want to cut the wire longer. You mm-hmm. don't want to cut it too short. Always go too long, right? So anyway, throw lines and throw bags. There's a company called Weaver. They make a throw bag that I use, which I don't have the heaviest bag. It's just a 12-ounce bag. It's a heavy canvas, torpedo-ish shaped bag with a lead shot in it, basically.
I'm so confused. Why do you need to buy a bag? Like, why don't you just fill a sack with some buckshot and toss it?
So I actually do something like this. When I'm doing like a soda activation, and I'm bringing an antenna along that I would need to throw a line into a tree,
uh-huh.
I bring a small empty bag, like a little drawstring bag, and I fill it with rocks. And
okay.
then I just use that.
Okay.
There is a difference, though. So you're asking a very good question, because a throw bag is extremely small, very small diameter on the vertical if it's coming through the top of a tree.
Okay.
And it's heavy, because lead is obviously... For its density, for its size, it's very heavy. So they do really good at going like straight through a tree. A bag of rocks is much bulkier
okay.
and not as heavy as straight lead. So I found that, one, I can throw the lead shot bag higher than I can with just a bag of rocks.
Okay.
Not like an appreciable...
Why don't you slingshot the bag of rocks?
Oh, they do that. They have slingshots that are attached, that have a fishing reel attached to them.
Okay.
And they use that to, like, launch a load into a tree. And then they hoist up their static line that they will connect the antenna to.
So many solutions.
Yeah. They even make, like, potato guns, like pneumatic potato guns for shooting, like, a tennis ball attached to a line, like, boom, and they shoot it way up into a tree. And that's always fun. But it the throw bag and throw line packs up really small. They sell a drawstring bag that it all collapses into and folds into and all that stuff. And they work really, really well for, you know, like a day out portable, you go to a park or whatever. They work really well for throwing in. So generally, just the tip I'll throw out there. If you're thinking about getting into something like an end-fed half wave or just a long wire antenna, having, or even throwing up a dipole at home, right? If you want to get a dipole up into a tree, having a throw bag and throw line is not expensive. I think it's, you know, all summed up, I think it's somewhere between $30 and $20. It's not very expensive. And the rope that they use is arborist line, as they call it. So it's designed for people who climb trees for a living. And the rope it slips through trees. It doesn't get stuck. So like paracord.
So smart.
Right. So paracord is something that a lot of people are like, well, I've got a hank of paracord over here. I'll just use that. Paracord is notorious for getting stuck in trees.
Right. It snags really easily.
Because it's like a nylon polyester blend.
Right.
And if it gets
and
hot.
And it's braided.
If it gets hot, yeah. It like seems to catch. I've always had problems with doing paracord for throw line. I don't know what it is about the weavers. I don't know what it's made of, but it seems to go up into trees really easy and comes out really easy. Everything is like rounded corners on the throw bag line. It just makes it really, really easy.
Very well engineered throw bag is what you're saying.
Yeah. And for me, I use it's a packable cube that like folds down and compresses.
Okay.
And the line, it's maybe got an opening that's like, you know, a foot and a half on all sides of the opening of this square, and it's cube shaped. And then all the corners have little pieces of fabric that allow it to kind of like not catch on any of the rope.
Huh.
So the rope goes in and it's just loosely packed into the bag, the cube, so that it can't knot itself up. It doesn't catch on anything. So you throw it right from the cube. The line just goes trailing right out of the cube. And then when you're done with the day, you run all the line back into the cube, and there's a little pocket on the inside of the cube that you put the throw weight in, attached to the line already, and you're ready to go.
Wow.
So yeah, that's the ham radio minute. Think about a throw line and a throw bag for getting out there and getting your antenna on the air, hopefully this month, the month of November. Why? Because I like November, and I like antennas.
Isn't there something else happening in November?
Thanksgiving.
No, I thought Hamfest.
No, the ARRL sweepstakes is in the month of November.
Okay.
The first week of November is the Morse code sweepstakes.
Okay.
And the last weekend, I think the last weekend, is the single sideband sweepstakes.
What is a sweepstakes?
It's a contest.
Entail? Okay. And then what do you win?
The goal of sweepstakes is to hit all the districts or divisions of the ARRL.
Oh, so when you say sweepstakes, it's not actually like a cash prize.
No, no, no. The goal is to make at least one contact in all the different areas that the ARRL is like, you know, involved in or is support of.
Interesting.
And if you do that, it's called a clean sweep. If you're able to make a contact in every one of these areas, you're actually allowed to purchase a mug from the ARRL that says you achieved a difficult goal, because it's actually really hard to do.
Like, how many people have done it?
Oh, a ton of people do it. Like Prince Edward Island is an area that the ARRL, you have to get a contact there, which is difficult. The Northern Territories in Canada, there's only like a couple people up there that actually participate in sweepstakes. So it's actually really hard to get a clean sweep.
What if they have an area where nobody's participating?
Then you're not getting a clean sweep.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it works, right? You can't fake it.
Brutal.
But yeah, right on. So I want to throw this over really quick to mention a piece of gear that's not necessarily ham radio adjacent, a company that I support. It's called Peak Design. Peak Design makes camera bags, camera equipment. They do tripods, camera mounts, messenger bags, travel backpacks. I recently used their travel backpack when we went to Big Bear Lake. They make really, really good equipment that not only works for cameras, because that's kind of what they're designed to do. Mm-hmm. They're designed to be water resistant, protect the cameras that you use out in the field, which I use a ton for YouTube. But they're also modular in their design of how you organize them.
Yeah, I use a Peak Design bag too.
Yeah, you have like a tote bag and you have like one of the messenger bags. Mm-hmm. They're modular, so that means that you can not only pack your cameras, but you can pack your radios, particularly QRP radios. Those candy bar shaped KX2s, KX3s, and now the 705 mm-hmm. are perfect for Peak Design bags. I recently got their Peak Design travel tripod. I used that again when we were in Big Bear. Fantastic kit. Really, really good stuff. So I'll post a link to my affiliate code to Peak Design so you guys can check it out. Really good stuff. They kind of got big on Kickstarter. It's kind of mm-hmm. how they kicked the brand off with yeah. their everyday messenger bag. And it's top quality stuff. I've used that messenger bag for years and years and years.
I think it's just a really good looking bag.
Yeah.
You know, the fabrics that they use, the color lines that they have, like, I think it's really nice. But it is, in essence, like a one-size-fits-all bag, right?
Pretty much,
like,
yeah.
So if you have one camera, and then, because I used to use a bigger digital SLR, mm-hmm. and then moved over to the Sony A-series, which is like a significantly smaller camera,
yep.
and I didn't need to change my camera bag. Whereas before, it would be like, oh, you know, I bought this digital SLR bag, and now the new camera doesn't fit in it, right?
I used the Low Pro stuff for a long time, and there's nothing wrong with Low Pro. Peak mm-hmm. Design is a little bit more expensive, but I feel that the quality is that much higher. There's so many more options mm-hmm. in the Peak Design stuff. So anyway, I'll just leave that there for you guys. You can think about it. Take a look at their stuff, because they do have a huge line of products that all work amazingly well. And they've got tons of YouTube videos that cover it, and people have talked about them. So good stuff all around. Okay, next up, we're talking about reviews.
I love the
reviews for the podcast. Thank you so much, everybody who gave us reviews. We have gotten a ton, and we love hearing your feedback in review form. We use iTunes for that. If you give us 5 stars on the podcast, it helps out the podcast get in front of more people. And it, you know, you can really review it
anywhere that you're listening to it.
Sure.
It's just in terms of us being able to access those reviews easily. Mm-hmm. iTunes is kind of the one we go to read.
Other systems will, you have to go like episode by episode to see where people reviewed it. And so you will miss them, but iTunes puts them like right up front. So it's really nice for us. Only one review this week. We've had typically like every week we get a ton. And that's fine. We appreciate all the reviews. Thank you
reviews
so much.
Reviews are like my highlight. Reviews and emails are like...
That's why it's right in the front of the show, because it's your favorite.
Yeah.
I can't get her to stick around otherwise. If I just started out talking about ham radio, she's like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore.
It really does make it feel like a conversation, though.
It does.
Yeah.
So this one is from Jacob Gamble. Awesome and informative. This is a podcast that is super easy to listen to and a lot of fun. I clean windows for a living, so I'm able to listen to quite a few podcasts at a time. Currently studying for my tech license, and this makes it a lot more fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
I like hearing about, you know, how people digest podcasts.
Yeah, but I gotta say, he's gotta have the most satisfying job, right? Do you ever watch window washers?
And or it's scariest, just... right? I mean, because sometimes they're just hanging off the side of a window.
I know, but it's just so clean. Like, you know, when the squeegee.
So satisfying.
Yeah that kind so of stuff. Satisfying. Yeah,
indeed. Okay, well, I'm throwing it over to Leia with emails.
Emails? I don't have a ton of emails either. But
I think everybody had a tough week last week.
That's possible. they may not have enjoyed the political bit. I kind of expected that.
No, we didn't. Yeah. I don't think we went too hard in either direction, but.
I don't, but.
People just didn't want to talk about it. Maybe they just didn't want to hear it. That's why we put it at the end.
Yeah,
so exactly. If you missed out on that, go listen to last week's pod and make sure you stay for the ending.
I did get an email that was in response. I'm having, you know, a few email conversations with people who email me. But Don Hutchcraft said he couldn't agree more with the ending of the last podcast. We all just need to be more pleasant to one another. And he also doesn't have an issue with the length of our podcast, because we got a few comments over the past few weeks about the length of the podcast. They started running really long.
So he's on team long pod.
Yeah, he drives 1 to 3 hours a day, so he can listen to the entire podcast in one sitting. I also got a very nice email from Thomas White. He sent me over a Ohm's Law diagram. No text, just the diagram. And I think it had to do with the fact that I was saying that I don't actually understand the relationship between watts, volts, ohms, and amps.
Is it the triangle?
It's a circle.
Oh, okay. But it's got a T in the middle, right?
It's like a two-ring circle, like a pie.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yep. You know, there's people that get that tattooed on their body.
So really?
They can reference that. They can just like look at their forearm and they're never forget.
Oh, I thought it was just so that they could cheat on the exam. That's real dedication. Yeah,
real
guys.
Dedicated way to cheat.
Let me see.
Fill in the dead air.
I know. So sorry. So sorry. We got one from David Hughes that said that he forgot to mention. Oh, wait. Let me. Oh, no. This is a good long one. It says long email beer recommendation if you get that far from David Hughes. It says, hi, Leia and Josh. I found your YouTube channel as I became interested in ham radio and have used it as my encyclopedia of sorts. Whenever I have a question about something ham related, a quick search of the channel usually points me in the right direction.
Well, that's funny. I guess that's really cool. I've been making that many videos that
yeah. It's now a reference. You have like over 1,000 videos.
Yeah, but not on ham radio.
Yeah, well,
no.
I mean a lot.
A lot.
Yeah. As I have slowly become obsessed with radio and my wife wonders what the hell I am doing and why I'm listening to two guys discuss the best non-milk coffee creamers. Mm. Is that like a conversation people would have on ham radio?
Sometimes, sure.
Yeah. The answer is oat milk.
Oat.
Your podcast has
milk and oat.
What? How do you milk an almond?
I know.
How do you milk a cashew? Yeah, how do you milk a pea? It's oat milk, the answer.
Okay. Are you saying this with authority?
Yeah, because it's actually like creamy and has like a good mouthfeel for it. Yeah. Your podcast has been a wonderful example of explaining ham to a spouse. You guys are both great. Thank you.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you very much.
I don't think ham radio is difficult to understand as a spouse.
No, I don't think so.
It's just talking to people around the world, right? I apologize in advance for the length of this question, but here we go. First, some background. I received my technician a couple of months ago and have been using an FT70 regularly.
Okay.
I'm lucky enough to live in an area, NYC metro region, with a fair number of repeaters. Been listening a lot, but the 5 watts is generally not enough to transmit. I'm also using a Zoom spot to connect to YSF/WiresX, etc., with good result. I'm scheduled to take my general in a couple of weeks, and I'm looking into some HF radio options. In addition to operating at home, I'm very interested in POTA and SOTA. I have 2 younger kids who love listening in, and it would be great to get them out with me and make some contacts. With that in mind, here are the setups I'd love your opinion on.
Okay.
Shegu G50. Yes, only 20 watts, but it's still quite
G90. Portable.
Oh, it says G50.
Yeah, okay. That's fine, but that's what he meant.
Yes, only 20 watts, but it's quite portable and still has a waterfall and is by far the least expensive option. Mm-hmm. Do I use this to get my feet wet and upgrade down the line? It seems this one will take a little more work to get digital going. The IC70-300, I know you highly You recommend this highly, but is this something you think can be taken on the road? I don't plan on any crazy Everest trips, but is this going to be a huge PIA to move around? Yaesu 991A. I do like the idea of it being a complete shack in a box, but is the 7300 that much better and easier to use? IC705. Yes, only 10 watts, but super portable and would seem to be as intuitive as the 7300. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on getting an amplifier to get it up to 100 watts while at QTH and stick with the 10-watt portable?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the radio, and then he has also antenna questions.
Oh my gosh, that's so many questions.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to let you respond to the radio portion.
So the first thing, and I'm just going to say this up front because he mentioned it. He said he's in the metro area. Does that mean like he lives in a skyscraper? Like he's in an apartment? Like I don't know what that means.
I mean, you've just got to assume a lot of city noise, right?
Well, the city noise is one thing, but we're not at the antenna portion yet. But that was the immediate thing I worried about, is where do you put up an antenna?
Well, some people have roof access for their buildings.
Yeah, but I mean, that has issues. That has issues. So we'll talk about that when we get to antennas. Maybe he provides some more details. Okay. So he's right that the G90 is a fine place to start. It's $450 right now. It's on sale. And I would generally say that is an acceptable option to get into HF. You do have to appreciate it's only 20 watts output versus his other examples of the 991A and the 7300 are 100 watt output radios. However, the G90 is immensely more portable than both of those radios. Mm-hmm. You can backpack with the G90. He mentioned soda, mm-hmm. right? If you're doing a lot of drive-up sodas where you just drive your car up and then carry the radio out to the activating location, then all of the radio questions on size becomes moot. If he's going to throw this in a backpack and hike for miles, he's not doing it with a 991A, and the 7300 is borderline too far. Like, I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
Now, regarding...
I mean, it's big. The 7300 is...
And just so you know, Leia, the 7300 is actually kind of on the medium-sized for a base station, if not
I just wouldn't
size.
Lug that thing around outdoors.
It no, just, right. Know? I don't have a problem taking it to a park, like having it in an Apache waterproof case, getting it to the location, setting up and using it. I don't have any problem doing that. But he mentioned soda, so I always assume backpacking. G90 is going to be better for that. Now, the other end of the spectrum is the 705. Obviously, a QRP radio. 5 watts, 10 watt max output if you're on an external battery. Much easier to cart around than the 7300 and the 991. A bit smaller than the G90, but with the 705, you gain VHF, UHF. So you gain that shack-in-the-box capability in a 7300-like radio.
Okay.
I love the 705, love, love, love that radio. I've had it for a while, all things considered. I've had it than most people in the state
you have
and the country
it,
has had it.
Yeah.
I really
made
like
enough
it.
Videos on it. Just,
I haven't even done my
saying.
Review yet. There's a review coming out for that. Yeah, I haven't done a review.
How many videos have you made on this? And there wasn't
three
a review part of it?
Well, the live stream covered all the features on the radio. Well, pretty much all the features. But I haven't done like a review. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like a short form review talking about what I love, right? And
see.
And issues where people need to worry about.
So what you're
consider.
Saying is that you've already done the fact article. Now you need to do the opinion article.
Like I've done my research, right? I have here's my research material in video form. And now I just need to turn that into an actual opinion. Now, I will make a comment on the shack in the box thing that he mentioned with the 991A. I have nothing against the 991A, except for I just don't like the screen as much as is on the 7300. I think that it's the 7300 is a better radio in the HF side of the house. Now, the thing to keep in mind with an all-in-one radio is that they kind of are a compromise of both. If you're going to be an HF radio and a VHF, UHF radio, to cram it all into a box, you're making some compromises there. But let's say there are no compromises. Let's say it's a great VHF, UHF radio and a great HF radio. If something were to happen, you've put all your eggs in that one basket.
Okay.
if, you know, an emergency happens and the radio gets damaged for some reason, you've lost all your shack, right?
Oh, okay. So this is where you advocate for people to have more radios.
Right.
Always more radios.
Always more radios.
I see. Okay.
And there's also something else to keep in mind is that when you are operating VHF, UHF, you're not operating HF.
So like radio. In David's defense, you have to consider like him being in New York Metro likely means he doesn't have a ton of space.
Well, hopefully we'll get to that a little bit when he gets to antennas. But you could have a G90 and a VHF UHF radio. He already mentioned that he has a 5-watt output VHF UHF radio in the FT70, and he's not able to get out.
Okay.
So an alternative to that is get yourself a smaller 50-watt mobile VHF UHF radio.
Okay.
And the G90, and you can use both simultaneously.
What do you mean?
So repeater nets happen a lot, right?
Okay.
Well, I've often been in the shack listening to a repeater net while also scrolling around on HF and listening for what's going on in HF.
Okay.
Or working FT8 or JSA call at the same time I'm listening and talking on a repeater.
Okay.
You can do all that simultaneously.
Okay.
If you have an all-in-one unit, you cannot. You're doing one or the other.
Does the existence of the GSOC change your mind?
It doesn't change my mind about the G90 at all. The G90 is still a good radio.
Okay.
The GSOC has nothing to do with the G90 in the stock configuration of the G90.
Okay, but I'm saying, will the GSOC kind of get him the additional functionality that you would want in a shack?
Not in its current incarnation, no.
Okay.
In fact, the GSOC has more bugs than like anything I've ever seen.
So as it stands right now, you are recommending two additional radios to the one radio he has.
Well, not necessarily, because if you think that the 7300 is $1,000, the 991A is $1,200, and he proposed the G90, which is $450, he can add a couple hundred more dollars, and he can have a solid VHF, UHF radio.
Okay.
So, okay, thoughts, those are many, many thoughts.
Okay.
There's lots of directions he can go.
I think he's asking for a good, let's get into the antenna and then you can give a kind of final what you would do in his position.
Okay.
Antenna, being in a suburb of NYC.
Oh, suburb. Okay, good.
We don't have a lot of land or trees for a dipole setup. Mm-hmm. I was leaning towards a vertical antenna, either Comet, CHA250B attached to the side of my house about 25 feet up. Chameleon MPAS 2.0 spendy, but I could semi-permanently mount it at home and take it on the road when needed.
Okay.
Those are the two. So, and he says, if you're still reading this, thanks so much for sticking with me. Hope to hear your thoughts, advice on the above setup.
I mean, if he can swing it, if he can ground mount the vertical, he will have a better time with the DX Commander.
Okay.
I would prefer he would look at the DX Commander Classic, which is much cheaper than the Chameleon M-Pass.
Okay.
The advantage of the M-Pass is that it is a portable radio or a portable antenna. So he could pack it up out in front of his backyard or wherever he had it.
Okay.
Take it on the road with him, whatever. But at the same time, if he's doing a SOD activation, he can just build his own antenna out of wire.
Okay.
Right? Having an antenna project is oftentimes very cheap.
Okay.
And there are plans online to make a portable antenna. So really, it depends on how he's going to use the radio. If he's purely going to be a weekend warrior that drags his radios out, sets them up in the backyard, operates, packs it all in, and goes back inside, then the MPOS is not a bad way to go. The Comet, he's going to have middling results as an antenna goes with the Comet.
I just feel like most hams, even if they were intending on being weekend warriors, would end up just setting up a desk to be their ham shack in their home.
I talked about this in a newsletter article.
I just don't think people are going to pack it up and pull it out. And
you always have the best of intentions.
Yeah.
You always have the best of intentions. I will always dutifully set up my radio and pack it all in, and I will do that every time, yay, verily. And so what's going to happen is you're going to get frustrated packing it in, packing it out, packing it in, packing right. it out. And you'll either stop doing it or all of a sudden that antenna that...
Which Josh definitely doesn't want you to do. Don't stop doing it.
Don't ever stop. So that antenna that was supposed to be a portable antenna, all of a sudden is the antenna you left up probably a little too late one weekend or you left it up all weekend and now you got to clean it off and do all this other stuff that you don't want to do. I'm generally of the mindset when it comes to an HF antenna, and build your own. You can build a vertical homebrew antenna. There's no problem with doing that. That you're going to be much happier in the long run if you set yourself up with a home-based antenna.
Right.
Then just disconnect from that and go work portable with a portable antenna.
Yeah, because it sounds like antennas actually need a decent amount of setup to get right.
The good one, the ones that are effective, generally require long wires or long elements and an appreciable radial system if you're talking about verticals. Right. And that's not something you're going to pack up necessarily, except the DX Commander Expedition does make it pretty easy to pack it up and take it out. But at the same time, if you can swing it, I would look at the DX Commander Classic. I think you'll really like it from the standpoint of being in New York. You can probably make QSOs with Europe on 100 watts without much of a problem. Well, of course, you got to do it at the right time of day and, you know, hopefully the sun cycle's backing you up, propagation's good, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But you should be able to do it. And that's a lot of fun. Your Comet probably won't be as successful as that, consistently successful.
Okay, so what's the final recommendation here?
Well, I just said making contacts with Europe. So you're going to need 100 watts to do that.
Okay.
I would argue if you want to play HF, the 7300 is still my recommendation for a first HF radio.
Okay.
If you tell me that you're going to go portable a lot, like it's your primary operation sense kind of thing.
And you're only going to buy one radio.
the G90 is a place to start. And yes, there is some jank in getting it connected digitally. It's not that big of a deal. You need something called a CE19 interface device to do it, but that's not that big a deal. It's like $30 or something like that. But I feel like you will start looking at other radios at some point, particularly if you get really active.
Not everybody's you, Josh.
No, I know. I'm saying a lot of people will. Particularly if you get into it, you get real excited about it, and you start operating from home more often. If you're operating from home more often, you're going to want more power. And he mentioned an amp. The amps merely take the G90 to 100 watts, where the 7300 and the 99A is already at. And the 705, obviously, you can put an amp on that, but that's just going to get it up to 100 watts. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to say specifically because I, by the way, I've answered this question many times. Okay. And it's usually a back and forth. It's not a like, here's the answer, shut up, go buy a 7300. I need more information. Like, sure. I don't really have enough information to answer completely because I don't know. Like, if you told me 80% operating from home, 20% in the field, I would be inclined to say, well, you might want to get a 7300. And he goes, oh, I'm never backpacking, by the way. Okay, 7300. You know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
All those little things.
So it sounds like what you're saying is lots of backpacking, G90s okay.
Or the 705, yeah. But the 705 is $1,200, right? So
yeah.
Big shift.
But the 7300 is still going to be the best experience. You're just not going to be able to hike it up a soda summit.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
You nailed it.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really good at translating, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boys, what your dad actually means is...
clean your room.
Okay. Thank you, David. That was a really good question, I feel. And he also recommends Dogfish Head 90-minute IPA as a beer. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I forgot about Dogfish Head. That I remember being like diving really deep into the history of this brewery and all the crazy things that they do. And because they're not local, it just totally, I don't even remember to look for them.
Do you remember what our favorite beer is from Dogfish Head?
Was it the one with the raisins?
It was called Higher Math.
Oh, Higher Math was good. But they also did a recreation of, or an inspired version of, a Peruvian dish.
Chicha. That's corn, not raisins.
Yeah, I don't
Chicha's made with corn.
I don't think we ended up getting the chicha. I think we looked for it.
I think I've had it.
Are you special?
No, I'm pretty sure Darren and I have had it.
I believe that.
Yeah, but Higher Math is amazing.
I mean, Darren's really the only other person you should be having, like, very special beers with.
Okay. But since he's in the area where Dogfish Head is and he can get Higher Math, if they still make it, I don't even know if they still make it anymore. That stuff is amazing. Amazing. It's not an IPA. They're known for their strong IPAs, but it's very, very good.
Yeah, I like Dogfish Head. They're very inventive. And he also says, The Thing is one of the best horror movies ever. You must watch. We did watch.
I have seen it many times, of course, but
I didn't love it.
Why? Why didn't you like it?
I think I wasn't in the mood for it,
you
kind of pushed it on me.
I don't know that there's a time where I'm not trying to get you to watch a movie where you're not into it and I'm pushing you to watch it, though.
That's not true. It's not true.
When has there been a movie that, like, I'm really about, then I'm like, Leah, you have to watch this, and you're like into it?
The Halloween movie that we watched on Shudder.
Which one was that?
It was whatever the Shudder original was.
What was it about? Are you talking about last year?
No, this year. I think I fell asleep during it, though.
The one that you watched last year was the one where they set up the fake haunted house? Haunt?
Yes.
That was good. Terrifying. I made your sister watch that, too. That was fantastic.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
That was, by the way, go watch that if you can find it. It's called Haunt. It's got like a clown mask on it.
I hate so clowns,
good.
Too.
So oh, good. Man. So good.
Very disturbing movie. Okay, we've got an email from Martin Zybok. It says, Hey, Leah and Josh, you guys rock. I have a question for Josh. When I'm out portable, I always get people walking up to me and asking what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You have literally had people call the police on you.
I have,
so, yes. I say that I'm an amateur radio operator, and they have no idea what that is. Mm-hmm. How would you quickly explain what ham radio is to someone that has no idea? And it says, Thanks, keep up the great work, 73, Martin. VE3LMV. I'm sorry, I haven't been reading everybody's call signs.
Jeez, Leah, yeah, that's apologize. Like a ham radio operator's identity.
I apologize.
You have deeply offended.
Sorry, David.
Okay, so I have talked about this topic before. Mm-hmm. And I generally view this as the ham in question being put into an opportunity of being like a good steward of radio.
Yeah, you actually believe every member of Ham Radio Crash Course is an anointed ambassador.
You're an anointed ambassador of Ham Radio. And so you better make Josh proud when you go out there.
Yeah, don't be a jerk.
So having a tight five on what ham radio is always like a good thing.
The elevator pitch.
That's right. Well, that's like a tight 60, but 60 seconds. So I like to start it out by saying ham radio is self-supported communications. It is equipment that we own that allows us to communicate to other parties tens of miles to thousands of miles away from our location that we're at right now.
Okay.
Under our own power, meaning we are not being assisted by AT&T or Verizon or the internet. We can go directly to the person that we're trying to talk to.
I'm getting like real wide-eyed, like glassy right now.
Because it's so good.
Oh, man. That is... Well, that if you want people to walk away
I mean,
that's dead on.
But he already said I'm a ham radio operator. I'm assuming he also mentioned like I'm talking to people across the country or talking to people wherever. Hey, I just talked to somebody in Japan.
I mean, literally, but if you're trying to get people in a ham radio, mm-hmm. the first step I would say, like, if I'm operating and somebody's like, oh, what are you doing? And I would basically explain that I'm practicing contacting people in, like, other areas. Mm-hmm. So that in case of an emergency, if all communications are down, mm-hmm. I'm still able to communicate and reach people in areas that can check on my loved ones.
Yeah, and that's a fine way of spinning it. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you're trying to sell ham radio, I think that's the first part. And then you could go into like, oh yeah, I've actually made friends. It's almost like pen pals.
Right. And, you know? And make sure you say it's not just people talking, right? Like, yeah. We exchange data.
Yeah.
We have the ham radio internet, basically.
Yeah.
Right? All that kind of stuff is available via ham radio. It's really just an ad hoc, self-supported communication system.
Yeah. I mean, but you are using a lot of words that if people don't know what ham radio is, like, you've explained it in a way that if you're talking to another ham radio operator, they're like, definitely. All those things. That's all the things I do. But in reality, if you're talking to somebody who has no idea what ham radio is or why it's still even used, mm-hmm. right, it's more a question of, like, understand what this is really about and how it could benefit them mm-hmm. in terms that they could wrap their mind around how it would fit in their life.
Yeah, sure. And yeah, absolutely explain practically what you're doing, right? Oh, I am trying to make contacts to somebody that's four states over, right? You know, wherever you're at. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to talk to Tennessee. I'm in California, right? That kind of thing. Talk about what you're trying to do and that it's all contained here. This antenna is literally talking to that other individual.
Yeah.
Right? This equipment is literally communicating.
There's this really amazing element of, like, envisioning ham radio. Like, I'm somebody who kind of likes to romanticize things that I'm doing, right? And if I were to envision what a romanticized experience of ham radio is, it's like virtually walking into different neighborhoods and meeting people where they live.
Interesting. Yeah, sure.
You know, and so you can develop friendships with people in other states and other countries mm-hmm. and actually get to know what things are like in their area of the world or the country.
Very good. I like that. Yeah. Is that all your emails?
That's it.
Very good.
That's it.
Well, new segment, which we added last week, our drink review. What are we drinking today, Leah?
Well, we're drinking your vodka of choice. Not straight up. Just like you love
off
Tito's.
The handle.
I have bought a lot of other vodka for you over the years. Mm-hmm. And you always go back to Tito's. And it's like, it's distilled in Austin, which is so
great.
Nice.
Yeah.
You made basically Cape Cods, right?
Well, in honor of the amazing individual with the skateboard.
Yes. I think it's like 420. I don't even remember the rest.
If you've seen the video, there's a gentleman. He's on a skateboard.
That's a vibe.
And he's vibing out to Stevie Nicks. Well, it's Fleetwood Mac.
But yeah.
Stevie Nicks, and you only hear him, you only hear the music.
Can you sing it for me? I don't remember
I'm
the
not,
song.
I'm
Could
not
you?
Gonna,
I just
do it. Do
no.
It.
You're really good at it
no,
though,
not,
and
not
I don't
Stevie
remember
Nicks.
The lyrics
on.
At all.
No.
Okay. Well.
But he takes a big pull off of Ocean Spray Cran Raspberry.
Oh, the shelves are empty. Like, people are.
Ocean Spray literally gave this man a truck.
Yeah.
And in the bed of the truck, cases of Cran Raspberry.
Yeah.
So he's all set up. There's been posts that said, like, things only started to get better in the world once this man appeared. Or, like,
yeah.
Things only started getting better in 2020.
Well, it was a TikTok video, right? That's where it originated.
No, it originated on Instagram.
No.
Nope.
It was a TikTok video, I promise you.
I don't think so.
I swear to you.
Even if that's true and I knew it was true, I was still going to say Instagram just to piss you off.
No. And then...
Because he's got an Instagram channel and he was talking about the post. It's on Instagram.
Ripped from TikTok.
Oh my gosh.
And what's his name? The guy from Fleetwood Mac.
Is it Nick Fleetwood?
Yes. He then, as a result of that, joined TikTok and made his own version of the video.
Yep.
It's amazing. And then Cheech and Chong joined.
So many people have done a cover of this. One of my favorites is the guy in the Black Hawk helicopter. He's doing one.
Yes.
There's a Canadian who's got a toque on and he's drinking maple syrup instead. Really, really good.
There was some guy eating a taco.
No, the pumpkin. The pumpkin head guy.
Yes.
Who pours a whole pumpkin spice latte on his pumpkin-y face.
Yes.
And it goes through the holes in the mouth. It is just everywhere. So good. So good. So in honor of that, having some... So cheers. Cheers.
We're having some
cran raspberry. There's a little clinky clinky. You know, it's just a simple
beverage. It's a really like feel good video though. Mm. You watch the video and you just feel so free.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's because I'm pretty sure he's skateboarding down a freeway on ramp.
Yeah, which is fantastic. If you can make a freeway on ramp vibe, you know, that's pretty impressive. Now I will say I'm not doing straight vodka and cran raspberry.
Yeah.
I don't do that. I take the SodaStream. Mm-hmm. Double charge it. So double the carbonation.
So bubbly.
So bubbly. And dump that in there. So that's what we're drinking today. So, well, now that you have a beverage, Leia, it is time to dive into those test questions.
Okay, I'm going to just apologize to everybody in advance. My brain is so fried today.
Well, this is, you know, it's good to challenge yourself. It's good to put yourself in situations where, you know, you don't feel the best, but you're going to persevere. It's all about that positive attitude.
Yeah. So positive.
So positive.
So positive. Okay, I'm on 6 of 35.
Here we go.
All right. Which of the following is a result of the fact that the amateur radio service is secondary in all or portions of some amateur bands, such as portions of the 77-centimeter band? A, U.S. amateurs may find non-amateur stations in those portions and must avoid interfering with them. B, U.S. amateurs must give foreign amateur stations priority in those portions. C, international communications are not permitted on those portions. D, digital transmissions are not permitted in those portions. U.S. amateurs may, U.S. amateurs may find non-amateur stations in those portions and must avoid interfering with them. Yay.
Yeah. That one's kind of self-explanatory. And two of those questions you can kind of just throw out.
Yeah.
The stuff about digital or that it's allowed, it's not allowed, or may appear, not appear. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If it's not ham radio talk and you stumble onto it, don't just engage.
Stop. Yeah.
Just move off. 60 meters is also like that, but that's when you get onto HF.
Okay. What kind of hazard might exist in a power supply when it is turned off and disconnected? A, the fuse might blow if you remove the cover. B, circulating currents inside the transformer might cause damage. C, static electricity could damage the grounding station. D, you might receive an electric shock from the charge stored in the large capacitors. What am I reading? Hold on. It's the power supply is turned off and disconnected, mm-hmm. and it's still a potential hazard?
Yeah.
The power supply, as in the cable box. That connects?
No, it's a little... So on the 7300, I have a little box next to it that has AC power running into it. I have to turn it on and it outputs DC, which goes into the radio.
Okay.
When I shut that off and disconnect it, that's where the questions are lining up.
Oh. I don't know. You might receive an electric shock from the charge stored in the large capacitor. D. Oh my God. That's right.
Yes. Very good. The capacitors can store a charge and you can get a shock from it.
Ha ha.
Fun story. If anybody decides to get into, you know, because who wouldn't, decides to get into buying arcade machines.
Ooh, I used to have arcade machines as a kid.
Yeah, so if you ever try to work on those, one of the first things you need to do is discharge the CRT monitor in the back, because it's like a bad shock that you can get from it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How do you discharge it?
Ground it. Use like a screwdriver to a ground line, but make sure you're using a shielded screwdriver. You know, there's all kinds of ways to ground it. You know, the, okay. There's something called a chipstick, but that's a whole different thing.
What is a band plan beyond the privileges established by the FCC? A, a mandated list of operating schedules. B, a voluntary guideline for using different modes or activities within an amateur band. C, a list of scheduled net frequencies. D, a plan devised by a club to indicate frequency band usage. A mandated list of operating schedules, right?
Stop looking at me. It's just not, answer the question.
Like, not schedules in the sense of time, but like it's like a schedule.
Or... I don't know. That sounds like schedules in sense of time.
Okay. Well, then that's not the right one.
The FCC says you must activate your radio.
Oh, okay.
Is what it's saying.
Like, like a schedule, think like a list.
That. Think about that.
Oh, okay.
I just ruined your... See, you can't look at me. Just answer the question.
Well, it's not voluntary. A band plan is not voluntary, right? The band plan establishes what you can and cannot use based on your...
What does the question say, Leia?
What is a band plan? Oh, beyond the privileges established by the FCC. A voluntary guideline for using different modes.
Right? Yes. Okay. And in fact, last week there was a question about the volunteer coordinator.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is the approximate bandwidth of a VHF repeater FM phone signal? What?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's A, between 50 and 125 kilohertz, B, less than 500 kilohertz, C, about 150 kilohertz, D, between 10 and 15 kilohertz. How would I know this? How would I know?
You'd have to look it up and
I mean,
how would you know it right now?
I'm just going to go with B, less than 500 hertz. Okay, between. Technically.
Well, what was the answer?
Between 10 and 15 kilohertz.
So that was D?
D.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. How would I know that?
Well, now you do. 10 and 15 kilohertz.
Okay.
Never forget. Remember, it's the bandwidth is the size of the information.
Right.
That you're taking up in your transmission.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking on FM. It takes up 10 to 15 kilohertz.
Okay.
The space of the band, the 2 meter band.
Yes, I understand.
Well, you would know that if you knew how wide a FM transmission is.
Right, and
that's right. I mean, but yeah. that's what you would have to know to answer that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Which of the following measurements are commonly made by using a multimeter? A, signal strength and noise. B, voltage and resistance. C, SWR and RF power. D, impedance and reactance. What is a multimeter? Isn't that like a voltage reader?
Little box.
It's voltage and resistance. B, voltage and resistance.
You got it.
Got it. I got it. What happens to power lost in a feed line? A, it could come back into your transmitter and could cause damage. B, it can cause distortion of your signal. C, it is converted to heat. D, it increases the SWR.
Feed line loss.
I don't know. It's converted to heat. Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. Woot. And again, that's the coax line that goes from your radio to the antenna. Over time, cables become lossy.
Right.
And that's, it increases the amount of loss, power that is lost.
Okay.
And it gets hot.
Yeah, that's how you cook a hot dog on it, right?
I mean, not intentionally, but I don't just have hot dogs lying across my coax and
that's
come out.
That's your
and
mistake.
Like, come out and be like, well, there's your problem. Find the hot dog that's cooked. There's your loss.
That would be so amazing.
No. We don't use a coax line tester. We use coffee. We tried using Nathan's brand for a while, but
ballpark.
You know what? I was going to say, the other one we tried, which is actually pretty good, but a little expensive. The ballparks, they plump when you transmit. That's how you know.
All right. That was five, so.
That was five. Good work, Leah.
Yeah.
Fantastic job. How'd you feel about that one?
Okay.
You were above average? Did you get three out of five?
Did I miss two?
You missed one, at least.
Yeah.
I wasn't keeping track.
I wasn't either.
Yeah.
I've had too much Tito's.
Tito's.
Is that how they say it in Texas?
Let's piss off some Texans.
Every time I've been to Texas, I have really enjoyed it. So,
how many times have you been to Texas?
Two or three.
Where'd you go?
I've been to Houston and Dallas.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't go with me.
No.
We went to Austin. I wouldn't call Austin like your stereotypical Texan like city. Like, yeah. When people think of Texas, I don't think they think of, like,
oh, no, Austin is, like, L.A. in the 90s?
I don't know. It's a cross between, like, Portland and L.A.
You've never even been to Portland. You don't got a lie to hang.
Well, I do know when we checked into our hotel, about 60 naked bicyclists rode down the street.
Yeah.
And I haven't really seen that happen in L.A.
Oh, you haven't?
No, have you? I mean, aside from like a naked homeless person, which happens, but not like a coordinated group of 60 homeless people.
Yes, no.
Yes, no.
I agree with you. I have not seen that in LA. All right.
Very good. Okay, so show topic, a little bit of a continuation, actually, of this whole show. We talked about throw lines. We talked about helping out the ham, thinking about, you know, putting a shack together and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to put a little bit more meat on the bone for the November. And oh, no, wait, I missed something. No, you had a question. A new segment we're opening up. Boy, I screwed this whole thing up.
What happened?
Leia's Question Corner. New segment. Leia, you have a question.
Isn't the whole show my question corner?
Well, you answer questions. We have you answer questions for our amusement. Big fans of Schadenfreude in the house, in a ham radio sense. No, when you have questions for ham radio, here is your opportunity to ask them.
Oh, I just want to know why it's so hard to figure out which sodas you can drive up to.
Very specific question, a very good question, and I will do my best to answer it. So Summits on the Air website has a list. Actually, it has a whole mapping system. It's called Soda Maps. Just Google Soda Maps, S-O-T-A, maps.
I don't trust what you have to say about soda at all.
Why?
Because the last time you told me about soda buttons, that led me down a real weird path of nothing related to Summits. Found out they're called Summit Markers.
Benchmarks.
Yes, benchmarks.
Okay.
And now you're telling me to go look up soda maps. I'm sure that's not going to be one.
And on your right, Shasta.
That's funny because we are near the Shasta.
I was thinking it was funny because it's also a mountain.
Oh. I was thinking, yeah.
You see what I did there?
Yeah. But it's, I actually do see the Shasta can spinning in front.
You know what's the best part about that? Is I like going down and seeing what's the new label they have on that can. They change the labels all the time.
I know.
Like Tiki Punch was up there the last time I was down there. And then they had the Paloma one, the grapefruit one. I was like,
you guys are really into soda.
Cheap 3-liter bottles of soda.
Those are the best to make terrariums out of, by the way.
Yeah.
When I was in...
We went a different way. I was thinking those are the best to make dry ice bombs with.
When I was in high school...
This is why you come to this show.
Yeah.
Different perspectives.
No, when I was in high school, we had this project where we had to make a terrarium where the top was for a plant. And then the middle was something decomposing or something, or I don't even remember what the order was. But then the bottom was like a fish, which they could never do now. No, they would never be allowed to do a science project in which
in
the bottom.
Today's class, we will torture a small fish.
And then that is actually how I got my frog, Manhattan J Frog.
Of course.
Right? Because somebody decided instead of a fish, they would do a frog. Mm-hmm. And then my brother killed that frog with
my
a
God.
Bouncy ball.
We have turned this podcast into the longest running.
Never forgive him.
That you have against your brother. You bring up this frog.
He just.
All the time.
You know what's really crazy about that? Like, I really.
That you bring it up all the time.
No. It's that Edison would totally do that.
Oh, Edison would totally do that.
Yes, Edison is very much like my
brother.
You
would be Ben.
Yeah.
He will never forget.
Oh, Ben will never forget.
A memory lockbox.
He's like an elephant with that memory.
Of things that have happened to him that are bad.
Yes.
And Edison would just be right there with that bouncy ball.
Yeah.
Trying to see if that frog can catch it.
Oh my God.
All right. So soda maps. You go to soda maps and you can narrow in all the soda summits, that the acknowledged soda summits, right? And you can click on them. When you click on them and get more information, you can go to Google Maps. You can go to Google Earth. You can get GPS information if you wanted to download that and put it into a handheld GPS.
Why can't you just select drive up though?
Because that's not something that's in the database that they populate, they aggregate for soda maps.
Okay.
They use the geology surveys where
GIS
the benchmark
stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
They have these geology surveys that include the benchmark information. And if a summit has a benchmark, it's generally included in Summits on the Air.
Okay.
The geologists are not checking a box that says, I drove up to this one.
Gotcha.
That's not there.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do...
There's something I can cross-reference.
Well, I'm telling you how to find out. So what you can do is, when you go to that more information for that summit, along with the Google Earth and Google Maps links that you can take, there will also be activation reports from people who've actually gone... to the summit.
And it'll say, I drove up?
Yeah, oftentimes. Okay. It'll tell you how they either got to the trailhead to hike, and then what the hiking information is.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it'll tell you, you know, all the way back to the major freeway you had to exit. Exit here, turn right here, park here, climb up.
Man, I have to love, like, helpful users.
Well, that's both a blessing in that it exists, but... The curse of it is that there isn't a checkbox, so you can't just filter on that information. So you do actually have to click on a lot of summits to find where the drive-up ones are.
Huh.
And, you know, sometimes you'll... down here in Southern California, Jerry, KG6HQD, mm-hmm. he has his videos that pop up. When you click the link, it actually goes to his YouTube channel, and then it'll show you the video of his activation.
Did he ever goat?
I don't think he did yet.
Sota goat.
I don't think he's done that yet. I'm assuming he will. So that's... Jerry's videos are really helpful if you're in Southern California or, you know, wherever he's activated. Because literally you're seeing... He walks through, like, I parked here.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the trailhead. We're going to go up and et cetera, et cetera. And you get a really good idea, too, if the Summit is dog friendly or not.
Okay.
Because Tayo will be with him. Tayo is his dog's name.
Gotcha.
And so you if you don't see Tayo, don't bring your dog. It's generally how I treat that. So if Jerry didn't bring his dog, and he did a lot of research when he did a lot of the activation. So if you don't see Tayo, leave your pup at home.
I wouldn't bring Charlotte anyway. No, she can't walk like around the block a couple times.
Corgis aren't known for their hiking prowess.
But. Yeah, they're good herders.
Oh yeah, they're not bad in like short little bursts of speed.
Yeah.
And nipping at the ankles of sheep.
But. Yeah, Charlotte doesn't nip though. We train that out of her.
Yeah. Those dangerous sheep out on the trail.
Do you remember when your sister's dog was still alive and he was like this big, white, fluffy dog?
Fluffy that dog looked that like, looked like a sheep.
Yeah, and then she would try to herd
constantly.
Him.
That dog like was neurotic whenever he was around Charlotte.
Yeah,
he knew. She just didn't stop.
Yeah, she was like, this is what I'm made for. I've never seen one in person. I was like, Charlotte, that's another dog.
I don't care. And just chase him around nonstop.
Yeah, I think that's why she stopped bringing him around when she knew Charlotte was going to be there.
And I don't know that Charlotte would nip at him. I don't.
Oh, I'm pretty sure she nipped.
But I don't think he liked being around other dogs.
No, I don't think so, because he didn't have a problem with
Muffin?
No.
The Chihuahua?
No. The brother-in-law's dog.
I don't know what kind of dog they have.
And it was a lab.
Oh.
Yep. Okay. It was just Charlotte. I know you're trying to defend the little girl, but...
don't be calling out my Charlotte, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll apologize to my sister. I'm sorry.
Yeah. She deserves an apology. Jerk dog.
Your jerk dog coming over here.
Freaking out my perfect dog.
My dog. All right. So now back to what I said earlier. Antennas of November, right? Obviously.
Wait. I have to know. Mm. Is there a ham radio calendar like in January? It's like a very nice, like handy talkie.
You're all you're doing right now is talking yourself into a ham radio crash course calendar.
No,
that's all you're doing right now. I hope you realize what you're doing.
It's like you've got on February. It's got like a base station with hearts all over it, and then in March it's got a beer and a hat. Like a green hat.
Leia, I'm telling you, you're workshopping a product right now is what you're doing.
Dress up some handy talkies. I did put eyes all over your shack.
It's like a radio flipped over in like the gutter next to an empty bottle of Jameson.
And then in April, it's like a radio surrounded by little bunny peeps.
Or it's just a radio in like a downpour. Just completely rained out radio.
I see.
Where are we going with this?
I don't know. It just
what's
makes
May?
Me... I never know what to do about May. What? Do you like the eyes in your ham shack?
I haven't taken them off. So like all my videos that I've been putting up have like the googly eyes. And nobody said anything because I face the shack now. So, like, the 7300 just has, like, two eyes sitting on it. And nobody said anything, so it's like, okay. I think it's funny.
I went in there just to dress up the tactical trash can. And I didn't end up dressing the tactical trash can at all.
Oh, I didn't even, I was like, you dress, I didn't even see that.
I didn't do it.
Oh, my God. Leia put, like, googly eyes on anything that has, like, a dial.
No, two dials that were, like...
That
were somewhat symmetrical. Yeah.
The amp worked out really well because the dials were big and chunky.
Yeah.
Pop that right on there. Those are definitely probably staying, but yeah. Okay, so antennas of November. Obviously, I kind of did a kill two birds with one stone thing. We were doing a family vacation to Big Bear Lake, California. And I thought, hey... why not bring all these antennas out?
Yeah, it was such a good idea. Like, a really good way to spend time with the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. I had a good time too. Thank you.
Yeah. Seems like it.
And so I shot a whole bunch of video. And I thought, well, that's my month of November, basically, just all of these videos of antennas. And we did a live stream out there talking about the antennas. But I thought I would dial it back a little bit. And because, again, the antennas that I brought two NFED half waves. I brought the K6ARK and the KM4ACK NFED half waves. Those are both YouTubers, by the way, that made these antennas.
Wow.
So KM4ACK sells his antenna as a kit. It's like $40. And K6ARK, he made it custom and sent it to me.
Wow.
And then I also brought the Chameleon M-Pass that we talked about earlier in the show.
The one that's too expensive?
It's like $500.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Just gonna, hang on, I gotta make a note.
Click, 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 click. And then I also brought the DX Commander Expedition that Callum actually sent to me. Now, that one is, it is a portable antenna, but it's like a graduating scale of like complexity and ease of setup.
Mm-hmm.
And then also on the flip side, though, the DX Commander probably takes the longest to set up, but it is the most effective antenna.
Oh, man, you love that thing. You were just like...
I was floored.
Yeah, I mean...
Floored by that antenna.
You would not stop talking about it, and I don't even care about antennas.
Yeah. Leanna's like, that's great, Josh. Wow. I went on vacation, and he figured out how to do more ham radio than he already does at home. That's great, honey. Shut up. Shut up. But I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a good collection of antennas because it covers that. Obviously, these are like portable antennas.
Yeah.
Antennas that you could deploy if you were car camping, right? Car camping, the DX Commander would probably be like awesome. You'd kill it at the campground. Everybody would be coming over saying, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
That thing looks amazing.
Yeah, because that's exactly...
You are the coolest person at this campground. How can I be cool like you?
That's the only reason I want to get into ham radio.
I know.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So it's an interesting juxtaposition because it generally walks you kind of through like the K6ARK is the most portable, most lightweight antenna I brought. And we talked about the effectiveness of it and how you could actually see the difference in capability of those antennas given the exact same radio, the exact same power output, how they perform differently.
Mm-hmm.
But then that also has a relationship to how easy they are to deploy and carry out in the field. The M-Pass, incredibly easy to set up, but in some cases might be too heavy in some cases to backpack.
Okay.
The KM4ACK, K6ARK, extremely easy to backpack, take it along with you wherever you go, right? But not as necessarily effective as like the DX Commander.
All right.
So these are all like considerations that I think one must do when looking at ham radio, particularly HF ham radio, that you need to consider cost, obviously, of how much money you're going to put in the M-Pass, like you said, $500. Definitely the most expensive antenna that I brought out that weekend. But also factor in, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to use this antenna?
To piss off my wife.
Mm-hmm. How am I going to deploy it? How am I going to carry it? Do I want to carry a big, heavy pack but have lots of capability? That's probably more in line with the M-Pass because the M-Pass does a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It's not just a vertical. It's also a wire antenna. It's like a multi-tool of antennas.
I do like that. Antenna. I like
lots of capability
with
that. But then to go along with that, it's heavier, naturally, because you've got more things that you've got to carry into the field. So like going back to when we answered the email earlier, you have to consider what your operation is going to be based on, how you're going to be operating, what your goals are, who you're going to talk to, how much power you're putting out, what radio you're using, all of that stuff, right? And that should be a big consideration in general, even if it's not just portable, even if it's ham radio at home, ham radio that you want to put in your backyard, an antenna mm-hmm. in your backyard.
Yeah.
Or an antenna on the roof, or an antenna.
You know, can we just get to the question that everybody wants to know?
Mm-hmm.
How do you hide your antenna from everybody?
I don't think you want to. I think you want to be loud and proud with ham radio.
Is that okay?
No.
I mean, an HOA wouldn't agree with that.
They would if it was an emergency situation.
Okay. Actually, you know, I realize that I have a question from Instagram about this. It says, so I have an HOA and I was wondering what I can do to hide an antenna. That's
I've done two videos on stealth antennas.
Mm-hmm.
Stealth antennas, and one of them was specifically titled HOA antennas. And there are. There's a lot of things you can do. You can do a dipole that goes around the eaves of your home. You can do antennas in your attic. You can do mag loops. You can do the day portable antenna type thing where you mm-hmm. set it up in the morning.
Didn't you tell me that people would like get cars?
Guys, we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the antenna car. So if the HOA's rules are based off of what's on your home, they can't really do anything about your car. So you have an antenna car.
So that's what I'm going to advise the person who messaged me on Instagram.
Consider the antenna car.
Yes. His original question was about CB radio. And I was like, I am so sorry. There's no experts in CB here.
I know very little about ham radio. I know even less about CB is what you said back then. That was Leia's reply, not me specifically yeah. talking. I am pouring another or filling up my beverage here, and I'll top Leia off too. But yeah, I think that's kind of the major point of this month and talking about antennas. And my live stream last week was about DIY antennas, making your own antennas. Because as much as...
Could there be any more antennas?
Well, and you know, that should be a key takeaway too, is that the antenna really is the most important part of your shack. When you get right down to it, everybody has difficulties in setting up antennas. Some people don't. Some people have tons of land and tons of money. They can just throw at the problem and, you know, everything's very simple for them. But everybody has to make trade-offs with what they want to do. Antennas that they want to put up, how they want to operate, that kind of stuff. But the antenna still is like the heart of your system. You can have like the coolest, best radio, but you could have a complete garbage antenna and it just won't be effective. You won't be effective. You won't be able to hear as much of the signals. You won't be able to transmit as effectively as you can. And so there's very simple things you can do to just mitigate that completely by doing some research up front on what kind of antenna to put up in your space, what is available to you in your space, like how much vertical space do you have, how many antenna mount points do I have, really tall trees, can I throw some lines in trees and get a dipole really mm-hmm. high up? If you can, you're going to love life, right? You're going to be really happy with the result of that. If you're like me, no trees, nothing. Yeah. No nothing.
We had a tree.
Yeah. It literally fell into our yard.
Yeah.
Which would have been nice because I could have went out to the front yard with a wire and that would have been very,
yeah, yeah.
Very few people would have seen that.
It was a very big tree. It almost hit the house.
Yeah.
When it fell over.
Yeah, it was a very big tree. And that was before we remodeled. So it would have hit the house.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It fell over later. So it's I guess it's good it fell over when it did.
Yeah.
But yeah, all those things to consider. You know, going back to the antennas that I brought out on the video weekend, you know, that I did. I don't really have like one antenna that shines as being like the best. The DX Commander is probably the most effective antenna.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't necessarily take that on a soda hike where I've got a hike.
Okay.
Because it's heavy, right?
Right.
It's big, it's bulky, lots of wires. Would I take that car camping? Yeah. Would I take that on a drive up where I'm going to be there all day and operating? Absolutely. If I'm just doing a soda where I'm hiking like 8 miles round trip, mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't. I would take Jason or Adam's antenna out into the field for sure. If it was a, you know, travel situation where I don't know where I'm going to be, or I'm going to go to a couple locations, well, maybe I'd want the M-Pass then, because I could have the capability to have a vertical antenna mm-hmm. where there was no trees. But then if there were trees or something I can string a wire along, well, then I string a wire, right? Mm-hmm. So you just have to think of situations where you will find yourself.
And everybody's life's different. That's why you own so many antennas.
Right, because I'm just a carefree, footloose, and fancy-free individual. I never know where I'm going to be day in, day out. So I have an antenna for every day of the week. You know, no, of course not. That's not true. But everybody has like a routine that they find themselves in, or, you know, they travel and they do this certain type of thing. Well, certain antennas are going to be better for that. And so this is really just to get the juices flowing again as the rest of the videos start coming out over the rest of the month. And all those antennas I mentioned, I will be reviewing. In fact, I have a couple other antennas that I haven't talked about that I will also be reviewing on the show, or the YouTube channel.
You know, it'd be a really good addition to your November month of antennas.
Oh.
If you painted the step IR.
I was waiting for you to say that. How to paint your step IR.
Watch as it disappears.
It's not going to disappear. It won't disappear. It won't.
Painted a sky color.
And was that like that one Simpsons episode where he painted the children's hospital? And the nurse comes out and goes, oh, you did a great job. A beautiful sky blue. And then immediately when she says that, a helicopter crashes into the side of it. And all the kids and the nurse start running from the helicopter as it crashes to the ground.
Well, I mean, the odds of another plane crashing in our neighborhood is like slim to none.
That is a horrible thing.
Yeah.
That I just said. Oh, my goodness.
Do you know what I mean, though?
No, like, I have no statistic. They have no relation to each other statistically.
I mean, how many planes?
There's no pilots who are flying overhead and goes, well, you know, if I was going to crash anywhere, it definitely can't be over the city I'm passing right now at 500 miles an hour. Like, they know. They don't know.
I'm just saying, it's really low odds that the same neighborhood.
The odds are the same.
No.
The odds are the same. Their odds are the same. You took statistics. You know that they're not related to each other. They're wholly unrelated.
Well, I mean, they're lower odds now because regulations on planes and pilots are much higher than they were back then. For anybody who doesn't know, a plane crashed in our neighborhood like in the 70s, 70s, 80s, 80s.
80s.
Yeah.
And I want to be very clear, when we say in our neighborhood, we mean in our neighborhood. Like, yeah. A couple of like blocks over.
Yeah, exactly.
There's pictures of it. The Aero Mexico crash.
It's a big deal in our city. There's a memorial every year.
But I mean, you know, we're still in a flight path. Of course.
I mean,
there are cities that people live in that planes don't fly over. They have the least odds of being killed in an air crash.
Maybe.
Maybe. You've got these mythical ideas in your head. You're romanticizing air travel and air crashes right now.
Planes go wherever they want.
I mean, some do, yes, but most don't.
I mean, this was like an Aero Mexico plane, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't like a Cessna or something.
No, it hit a Cessna.
Yeah.
It was a mid-air collision.
Yeah, which is amazing because planes go wherever they want, apparently.
That's the problem. No, we have Fullerton Airport, which is also by us, mm-hmm. and that's a private airport for people that fly Cessnas
mm-hmm.
or municipal, or there's a term for it, whatever. And then we're also in the path of LAX.
Right.
And the Aero Mexico was going into LAX. And the Cessna, I believe if I remember correctly, the Cessna struck the rear stabilizer on the back of the Aero Mexico. And when you do that on a plane, it basically just turns over belly up and then just dive bombs.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that's what happened. pretty intense. The whole story of that is a pretty interesting story. And, oh, by the way, the Cessna crashed in the elementary school.
Yes.
In the field.
The elementary school that our child goes to.
Not anymore, but physically doesn't go.
Right.
Right.
And they're talking about coming back in January.
Well, this got real dark at the end. We're two for two on podcasts. Yeah. That are like, real dark ending. Hey.
Yeah, really hold out for the end, guys.
Yeah, really make sure you stick in for who knows what we're going to talk about. Jesus. Wow, Leah. So, yeah, I don't know. Statistically, I'd say same odds.
Not the same odds.
Anyway. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to the Ham Radio Crash Course. Another week in the can. What do we call that when we complete a podcast? You can't say in the can. That's like a movie maker thing. What do they call that when you complete a podcast?
I don't know.
Another podcast in the memory card. Yeah. I'm curious to hear what antennas you're going to be potentially exploring in the future.
I'm just going to fox hunt. I'm just going to carry around a yak.
I didn't mean you specifically. I mean the people listening.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm trying to do the close here, Leah. I'm talking to the listener. How many episodes have we done?
It just seemed like you were talking to me.
Did you feel like I was closing up the show? I don't know. Were you? I don't know. What do you think? Where are we at right now?
Okay, close it up.
Put it in the memory card. Put
wrap
it in there.
Wrap it up.
I'd like to hear, though, what antennas you're thinking about using, maybe in the field or in your future shack setup. So, you know, make sure you join us on the Facebook, on the Discord, and always comment on the YouTube. If you haven't already, I've gotten multiple comments from people like, wait, you've got a YouTube channel?
Yeah.
I've been listening to your podcast. I didn't even know you had a channel.
That's amazing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, leave the reviews, send us an email, buy some stuff on hamtactical.com.
Oh, we didn't even mention hamtactical.com.
Yeah, I mean, we did a little bit.
The merch store, hamtactical.com. So if you haven't picked up your appliance operator hoodie or t-shirt, now's a good time. And make sure you wear that. When people come up and ask you, what are you doing in this park?
Operating an appliance.
Well, all right. That'll do it, everybody. Thanks so much for listening again. We'll talk to you next week. 73.
73.